Welcome in to the Thursday edition of the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Got a good show ahead here on the program today. We're going to talk a little Bigfoot today. That's what we're going to do. And we're also going to talk many other things related to Bigfoot. We've got a great guest in store for you today. Dr. Simeon Hine is our guest today. He's been on the program before. Dr. Simeon Hine is a former university professor in statistics and research methods. He came across the idea of remote viewing in 1996 and took as a skeptic. The results of the training were surprisingly positive and convinced Dr. Hine that there is a large area of scientific knowledge that is being withheld from public discussion. Subsequently, he established a nonprofit institute for resonance and began teaching remote viewing classes in Boulder, Colorado, and continues to teach online. He also became interested in the topics of crop circles, unexplained aerial phenomena, and extraterrestrials. Today, we'll be talking about if Bigfoot is an ancient primate or an undiscovered human, why the creature is seen around balls of light and other paranormal phenomena, and we'll be getting into some other topics as well. Let's welcome in to Darkness Radio, Dr. Simeon Hine. Once again, thank you, Dr. Hine, for being with us yet again here on Darkness Radio.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me today. Thanks for that great introduction.
Well, again, thank you for being here. You know, we'll just jump right into the weeds, so to speak, if that's what Bigfoot does, or if he gets here by portal, or we'll discuss that as well. You know, the argument has been for the longest time, Dr. Hine, that I've been told, I guess I've never been privy to sitting in on any of these meetings, but I've been told that there's been heated discussion as to whether Bigfoot is, I believe it's an aper is one side, and then I don't remember what the other side is, but there are some people who are very, very, what's the word I want to use here? They're very, very adamant at the fact that Bigfoot is a primate, and they stick their fist into the table and will tell you he doesn't appear through a portal. He is not an extra dimensional being. He doesn't appear anywhere from anywhere else. By gosh, he crawls around in the mud like the rest of us. And that's the way it's going to be. Now, Dr. Hine, I would say to you, why, first of all, should we maybe back away from that outlook on Bigfoot?
Right, Tim. It's a very interesting debate, and there are people on both sides, some who argue this is just a flesh and blood, they call it the FNB argument, it's just a flesh and blood mammal, perhaps undiscovered, unrecognized by science, rare. And then you have very persistent witness encounters where the witnesses tell us they see these Bigfoot creatures doing something or around phenomena that just does not fit in the 3D flesh and blood paradigm. It just does not act like your typical forest mammal. You know, as one park ranger I read in one of these accounts said, it's not your ordinary type mammal. And that would be an understatement. Right. I think we have to go with the evidence. I, for the longest time, was in the former category. I remember my first contact with this subject came as a teenager watching one of those Billy Jack movies from the 1970s. And they had previews in the movie theaters back then, like they still do now. But this was a documentary preview. It was advertised along with the Billy Jack film. And it said, update on Bigfoot. So I think I went with my brother to this film. I wasn't old enough to go to a PG-13 film by myself. And there they showed the Patterson-Gimlin footage. There in, I think it might have been 1975, 76. That footage was filmed in the Bluff Creek area in Northern California. These two guys come down from Yakima area, Washington State. They're not locals. They had heard about these sightings and they just thought, oh, wow, well, you know, like a lot of people, let's go to a Bigfoot hotspot. Even in the 60s, these are kind of two cowboys. One of them didn't even own a car. He had to hitch a ride to get back. And they film what's come to be called Patty, doing her thing. We've all seen the Patterson-Gimlin footage. So that's my first experience as a teenager. I don't have any other contact with the subject until I start going to UFO conferences in Laughlin, Nevada, the International UFO Congress, which was run by Bob Brown, Bob and Terry Brown, initially way back in, I think it started around 2000, maybe it was earlier. I started going around 2000.
Okay.
I got interested in the subject, by the way, from remote viewing, because just in the remote viewing genre, I was not really focused on anything related to this coming out of graduate school. I taught statistics, and I, as you said, I just came across the idea of remote viewing, and I was just sort of open-minded and skeptical. I could have gone either way on it, but I decided to take a class in 1996 at the Farsight Institute, which was run by Courtney Brown in Atlanta. And I just thought, well, this sounds really interesting. I really need to, I just felt like I should find out about this. Mm-hmm. And it really worked better than I thought. You really could describe pictures you wouldn't be shown for a half an hour, an hour, 2 hours later. And you were getting a lot of detail that you, as a statistician, I could just say you're going way beyond the averages. If you were just guessing about colors and shapes and sizes, you were getting a lot more accuracy than I would have expected from random guessing. And that opened my mind up to a lot of these other topics.
If I can ask Dr. Hein, what, when you're remote viewing and you're, even if Bigfoot is just coming into your vision, what are you seeing from this creature?
What are we seeing when we remote view Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I will say, and people can contact me, I want to start focusing on doing this because I think it would be a good way to create some sort of contact and communication with the creature. And that's something we can talk more about towards the end of the show.
Yeah.
I haven't done a lot of remote viewing of Bigfoot. Anytime you do an RV session, Tim, you're getting these glimpses of very faint data. And this is how Ingo Swann, Joe McMonagle, anyone, any system will tell you the same thing. It's a very faint signal. And the training is, the training is teaching you to pay attention to faint signals, not loud conscious mind thought. So it's not like it sounds remote viewing. You're not just turning a switch and watching a television channel of something that's non-local, you know, spying or astrally traveling over location, getting perfect information. You're getting impressions like you would the way if you were intuitively picking up signals from a friend or a relative or a partner, someone that you're connected with, and you start feeling their feelings or getting their thoughts. And we've all had this experience. You're kind of in synchronicity with them. So you're kind of in harmony with them. So you kind of pick up their vibe and their ideas and things. It's kind of like that, but you're consciously tuning into something that is not related to you. A distant place, person, event. And it's very faint signals. Again, it implies that, as Ingo Swann called it, there's a matrix out there, not quite like an Akashic record of everything. It's just more, I think of it, I don't know exactly how he thought of it because he never completely defined it, but he just said that, and this seems to make sense. I think anyone would identify with this. It's like a map. But there's a map of everything that exists at a quantum level, a frequency, a matrix of space and time. And then everything has its own signature in that matrix of space and time. And that you can identify that frequency and sort of describe it the way you, you know, as an analogy, tuning a radio into that frequency. Now, you're going to get static, which is your mind, other things, our lives coming into your mind at any moment. But you get some signal, and it's kind of separating out the signal from the noise. And it was that introduction to that in 1996 that showed me there was something else going on that I hadn't been taught about in school. And, you know, we've all been to school, high school or college. You know, in my case, I went to all the way through graduate school. That was 27 years of continuous education, no time off, from kindergarten to PhD. That's how long it took me to go from kindergarten to PhD. Wow. 27 years.
Jeez.
Yeah, long time. Nobody ever once talked about this anywhere in those 27 years, not to mention any of these other topics that we're talking about here on the show today.
Yeah.
They only mentioned UFOs and Bigfoot in a kind of, I would hear high school teachers talk, just occasionally mention this. And keep in mind, I grew up near the Hudson Valley. So those sightings would have been happening around the 80s, late 70s. And in fact, I have to mention this as an aside, Tim. Mm-hmm. our wrestling team coming out of one of the high school matches in Mamaroneck High School in Westchester, they had a sighting of a huge triangular UFO over the gym.
Really?
Now, really. And I spoke to the wrestling coach, Vinny, about it. It's on my YouTube channel. I interviewed him and I'm in touch with him. And he said they were afraid to talk about it because of the stigma, the ridicule. Some of my classmates, he said, told him it was the scariest thing they'd ever seen. It was chased by jets coming out of an airbase from Connecticut, and it went towards the New Jersey. And then there was a blackout immediately afterwards. They reported the sighting to the police in Mamaroneck. I mean, I don't know. What do you do with a huge triangular UFO? Not literally over the high school gym in Mamaroneck, but, you know, maybe a half a mile up. It was there. Mm-hmm. And they could all see it. And then jets came. He said it took off like from nothing to Starship Enterprise speed. It looked like that in just blink of an eye. It's going. The jets are chasing it, but it's faster than the jets. They all saw it, and no one ever talked about it. I didn't hear about it till about 5 years ago. And I graduated from high school in 1981. So we're talking a good 30 years later that I find out. Talk about stigma. I mean, how much don't we know about what's going on around us? So this happened to high school classmates. I didn't hear about it. I'm just mentioning that because this was the attitude in the 70s, as you sort of 70s, 80s, and talk about these things. So same thing happened with these topics. I'd heard about Bigfoot, UFOs, but everyone just sort of kind of they dismissed it as, you know, maybe it's legend. You know how this is. Mm-hmm. And then moving on, just going back to your question from about 10 minutes ago, I'm going to get back to exactly what you asked.
Yep.
So I knew about this. I came across at some UFO conferences, people talking about Bigfoot. Not as a primate. They were talking about why it's seen around UFO sightings. Now, Tim, I couldn't wrap my brain around this until a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Why would a primate be seen around UFOs? And even a listener, someone on my YouTube channel wrote to me the other day, said, Simeon, this doesn't make sense. We think of UFOs as being futuristic and Bigfoot as being like archaic relic, as you say, relic hominoid, mm-hmm. like ancient. Why would you see the two together?
Right.
That was one presentation, Stan Gordon talking about the UFO flap in southwestern Pennsylvania in 1973. I couldn't even wrap my mind around Stan Gordon's lectures, and I'm open to these topics. I can only imagine the rest of the population has a challenge. What happens in your brain is you reach a boggle point, and I've been to many, many UFO conferences. If it gets too pushed too far, you'll walk out of the lecture before Zoom days. We had real conferences with lectures, and mm-hmm. going back mm-hmm. to those are good. You get to talk to people. You sort of forget about it pretty quickly. I mean, your brain doesn't have a place to put it, and we're all busy people. We have lots to do. You, by the end of the day, you probably, maybe if you brought the book home, you would start reading it. But it's hard to process a lot of this, and you end up putting it into what Stanton Friedman, you know, a great UFO researcher, Stanton, called the gray box. You kind of don't, it's like, you don't dismiss it, but you don't know if it's true. So you just say, I'll leave it for another time. So that's what I did with Bigfoot for a couple decades. I knew about it. I heard Lauren Coleman talking with Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM. Mm-hmm. I think back then it might have been called the Art Bell Show. I'm not sure. It was late 90s. Mm-hmm. And I believed Lauren Coleman, the cryptozoologist. He said it's an undiscovered bipedal primate that lives in the Northwest. You know, and this is where the Patterson Gimlin film is, Northern California. So that's kind of in the ballpark of the Northwest. So anyway, my brain believed that category. You said undiscovered ape, very rare, huh? You know, so in science, I came across this chart recently in Science Magazine. There's hominoids, there's hominids, and hominins, which are us. Hominins are the humans. Hominids are human chimps. and hominoids are the whole family of apes, chimps, humans, and simians. Not spelled like my name, S-I-M-I-A-N. Yeah, the whole thing. And even there's another category that includes even a broader range of primates and humans above that. It's a little more complex name. I forget exactly what that is. I had it in that category until I started looking into this a few years ago when questions came up during live streams on my YouTube channel. People asked me what I thought about Bigfoot, and I realized I didn't know very much about it. I had just believed, and I'm not saying Lauren Coleman isn't a good cryptozoologist. I'm just saying I heard him and others. Grover Krantz is a anthropologist who was in the floor above me at Washington State University in Pullman. Grover Krantz was one of the first academics I know of in the U.S. that took the subject seriously, because there were a lot of sightings in the Wallowa Mountains near Walla Walla, Washington. Mm-hmm. There's a university, a college there, Walt Whitman College, I think, in Walla Walla, Washington. And there's the Blue Mountain Range and a whole big Blue Mountains and the Wallowa Mountains. That's a huge mountain range. There were a lot of sightings there, and Grover Krantz knew about these, and he got these plaster casts. He was known around WSU, but back in the 80s when I started grad school, I had lost touch with all these topics. I was like a grad student focused on, you know, grad student stuff and teaching and doing your dissertation. And I didn't have time for these things, even though I had read John Keel's book, The Mothman Prophecies, in high school. So I was familiar with this literature. My mom and I had seen a UFO in the Everglades when I was like 12. I mean, it was something really strange up there that I thought was the moon until she pointed out that the moon was on the horizon. It was that big. Wow. And hovering.
Okay.
Yeah. But I didn't really follow up. I had read one book, Timothy Good's Above Top Secret. Somewhere in college, I came across this book in town at a bookstore, and I just, maybe that sighting with my mom came back. And so here I am at age 20 buying a UFO book, but I was not really steeped in these topics. I don't think a lot of people necessarily were back then. So I was aware of it. I started researching the Bigfoot subject. Okay, Grover Krantz is there, though I didn't know him. There is a Bigfoot conference at WSU in 1989. I didn't hear about it till I started reading a book about Grover Krantz and the Bigfoot of the Blues, it's called. There was a book by Vance Orchard, a reporter in Walla Walla.
Okay.
It's a good book. And so here's the thing. Even Grover Krantz did not get into this. He was convinced, exactly like you introduced this subject, that this is an undiscovered primate. Big feet. We have sightings of it. Looks like a primate when it walks around. Except if you start reading the literature, there's reports of things that don't fit that description. Mm-hmm. It's very tempting to use these categories we've been taught by science. And as people in academic departments want to be accepted by their peers, you read reports of UFOs in these areas, the Bigfoot seemingly gliding, sliding, teleporting, things like this. The more you read into this, Tim, the more you see that they're aspects of Bigfoot that we could call paranormal. We could call it, like Ron Moorhead, the quantum Bigfoot. When you start looking at the evidence beyond Grover Krantz and Jeff Meldrum, another anthropologist, the witnesses say the Bigfoot creatures and other cryptids do things that don't fit the 3D model. They teleport. They vanish in front of your eyes. They're around balls of light. They cause brain fog. They cause time slips. So the more you research this subject, the more you're going to see it doesn't fit the flesh and blood model. We're dealing with something else.
Is there a need, and let me ask you this, Dr. Hine, is there a need psychologically for us to put it in a flesh and blood model? Because for our human mind, we need to relate to it in a flesh and blood model. We need to be able to say, hey, I need to be able to go up to it, poke it, and say, this is something I can relate to. Much like, let me put it this way, much like we need to look up in the sky and see that UFO craft and know that it's three-dimensional.
Right.
I think we've always assumed that a strange craft or an alien craft doesn't come through a portal when it comes here. It's flown from a distant planet. It's come here, right. And it is solid. And it's going to land in front of me, and I'm going to be able to go up, touch that craft, and I'm going to be able to go up and touch that alien being. Do we think too much in the literal 3D sense when it comes to these creatures?
Yeah, and there's a German phrase I would say in response to you, Sie haben der Schwerpunkt gefunden, which means you found the central point.
Okay.
That is the essence of all of this, exactly what you're saying. We can't relate to things outside the mental categories we grew up around. Not easily. It takes a lot of effort. The farther you go to do that, the more ridicule you're going to receive from your peers, the other hominins around you. They're going to start poking at you and laughing at you, right? Because, and that's a good motivation for many people just to let it go, because we all survive in these social networks and have jobs and things, right? So that's exactly it. We can't relate to anything outside the social consensus. Inga Swann called it reality boxes. Mm-hmm. And it's true with Bigfoot, too. It's very easy to say, oh, it's a forest ape. It's an escaped gorilla. But there's one problem with that. They don't look like apes. There's lots of descriptions. Some people describe them looking more like cats. Cat, human, there's so many descriptions of these creatures, some of which seem ape-like, and a lot of it seems more human. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these researchers have gone kind of along your line of thinking. They started thinking it was a relic primate, relic being from way back, you know, Gigantopithecus blackie, which was known to be in Asia. I don't know if any of those fossils have been discovered here. It's not clear that it ever walked on two legs, but it was big, you know, big, huge primate. Yeah, I think maybe up to 1,000 pounds. That would sort of fit. But Bigfoot doesn't look like that. You talk to witnesses and they say it looks more like a human. Sometimes it looks very human. And then sometimes it looks more dog-like. And then sometimes it looks more cat-like, which suggests different species. And yes, if we don't have a category in our brains to fit it into, it's increasingly challenging in any science topic. Now, let me go back to an example of this 200 years ago. Meteorites. Science didn't believe in meteorites. It didn't fit Aristotle's ideas. It didn't fit the ideas of the Catholic Church. So it was meteorites around the 1800s were considered to be peasant folklore. Peasant folklore. Peasants would describe seeing them coming out of the sky. We've all seen meteorites. Mm-hmm. That was considered folklore. It wasn't something that the urban scientists would see in London or Paris or Berlin. And they were considered to be volcano stones, that somehow some volcano somewhere had thrown it up and it was coming down. The other explanation being lightning strikes on stones, which would throw them in. And that was what the mind of scientists back then, they were called natural philosophers. That's all they could understand until it was outweighed by the evidence. There were scientists studying this, Jean-Baptiste Biot and Ernst Chladni, who made the meteoric argument. And they were severely ridiculed to the point where the French Academy of Sciences declared meteorites illegal, and they were confiscated from every museum across Europe. This is before there were museums in the US. All the meteorites were thrown away in the trash. So what does that tell us about mindset? Until there was a huge meteoric event in Eagle, France in 1804, where hundreds, I think, fell over an area that formed an oval. And when they looked at this, they said it's consistent with them falling from the sky, you know, the whole, and all of a sudden it became real. Mm-hmm. And this is true with all of these topics. Tim, it is really a good point. It's very, we have these categories. Now, here are the two categories here. Primate, relic primate, that's easy. And academics could argue this, like, you know, people say it's UAP, it's not extraterrestrial, find some sort of unexplained aerial phenomena, that even meteorites could be unexplained aerial phenomena. It's not as controversial. It allows congressmen and senators and peep scientists to talk about this without feeling like they're not going to get reelected. It's not going to hurt their career, right? Mm-hmm. Now, at the other end, Tim, people say it's woo. They use the word woo, yes. Whatever that means, which means quantum or something like that. Okay, if you want to think that quantum mechanics is woo, that's okay. But at this point, it's already 100 years old. Einstein and Satyendra Bose proposed the Bose-Einstein condensate, a quantum macroscopic object, 100 years ago. This is not really that new.
Right.
So if you want to say that quantum mechanics is woo or anything not flesh and blood, okay, but look, it's science. And this is the thing, where does this fit in? So let me jump to the punchline here.
Sure.
People that have studied this and have gone to a couple Bigfoot conferences now, some of them are not far from Boulder, Bailey, Colorado. People who've been studying this even as long, Tim, 50 years, in the case of Igor Bortsev, a former political scientist from Russia, Soviet Union, got interested in Bigfoot. They have Bigfootology in Russia. He concluded, as many others do, it's a paranormal human because of the witness reports. And I would say to our listeners, you have to go with the evidence. It's very important to stick with what the evidence shows us. The evidence shows us a paranormal creature that can do things that a flesh and blood creature just doesn't do. And this is what these researchers said. They started with the primate. They went undiscovered human, and where they're at now is paranormal human. I don't know if it's literally a paranormal human, but it does things that you would, in your, like you're saying, in our categories, like a paranormal human, like psychokinesis, telekinesis, mm-hmm. psychokinesis, be able to move things around. Just, yeah, it's in that direction. So it's something that doesn't fit any category very easily, but it's there.
It's time for us to take our break, Dr. Hine.
Okay.
But when we come back, I want to bring up a few of those things, and I want to bring up something that's been brought up plenty of times when it comes to Bigfoot, and yet we keep coming back to it over and over again, and that's the time of life and a lot of things that come up in paranormal programming, and that is death. We talk about what happens in death and what happens with our remains. And one of the things that we've never found is the remains of a Bigfoot. So when we come back, I want to talk about if this creature is truly not three-dimensional, what happens to the remains of a Bigfoot and why we've never seen remains of a Bigfoot. And how do you suppose, or where do you think, if this is not a three-dimensional creature, where do you think they exist if they're not in this plane? When we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Simeon Hine about where we think Bigfoot exists and what dimension Bigfoot may be in. The book, as we're talking about, there's actually a few different books here that I want Dr. Simeon Hine has out there. New Dark Matter, Monsters, Cryptids, Ball Lightning, and the Science of Secret Life Forms is the book we're focusing on. But he's also got Black Swan Ghosts out there, Opening Minds and Planetary Intelligence. You can find them at mountbaldy.com. We've got that link. You don't have to remember it right off the top of your head. We've got the link in the description of the show. So you can click on that link and check that out during the break. When we come back, we'll ask Dr. Simeon Hine, where is Bigfoot, or his remains for that matter? When we come back, we'll talk about the death of Bigfoot. Is Bigfoot really, truly a three-dimensional person or character or being in any other universe but this one? We'll answer that question when we come back here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. We are talking Bigfoot today with Dr. Simeon Hine. We're talking about whether Bigfoot's an ancient primate or an undiscovered human, and why that creature is seen around balls of light or other paranormal phenomena, such as UFO. When we last left you, we were talking about Bigfoot himself, and we were talking about different life cycles, and of course, part of the life cycle is death. And Dr. Hine, when we left people at the break, we were talking about remains. In the death cycle for us, we, of course, leave our bodies behind. And being that we don't know if Bigfoot is a three-dimensional person or character, We don't know if Bigfoot leaves behind remains, whether it be in this plane or in another plane. And if Bigfoot is coming through to this plane through a portal, obviously there's got to be another dimension that Bigfoot is coming through. Do you think that Bigfoot leaves remains somewhere, whether it be in this dimension or the next?
Right. No, it's a good question. Bigfoot definitely leaves physical imprints on our world. I mean, people have seen them chasing deer, chasing elk. We find these animals killed in very strange ways when the Bigfoot are there. It may seem a little morbid, but their heads are twisted around in ways that, you know, would be impossible for us to do. Dismembered in ways that would take extraordinary amounts of strength. They leave scat behind. At the Bailey Museum, which is where I saw the first real evidence for myself, Bailey, Colorado, there's the Sasquatch outpost. Mm-hmm. And as I write about in Dark Matter, monsters. I mean, that's sort of what catalyzed my interest in the topic, was seeing this map where people had put pins in and told of their experiences to Jim Myers and other people who work at Sasquatch Outpost all around the Colorado area. I didn't realize they were so close, just in some cases 5 or 10 minutes from where I live, the sightings, or wood structures or tree sounds and all that. There's scat. There is like a 40-inch long turd, which would not be from any bear or anything else. If you've been out in the forest, you know what animal scat looks like.
Yeah.
Yep. If you're a hunter or just like myself, a hiker, just enjoy being outside and in nature, in places where the animals are in their natural habitat, you know what scat looks like. Mm-hmm. Well, I've never seen any scat that's this long and continuous. And so they do leave physical remains behind. They sometimes leave things for people. People get into these habituation gifting relationships with them, if you read the literature. Mm-hmm. In a Bigfoot area, and it happens in your state too, where people decide to leave apples out for them. They like peanut butter, sweet things that they can't find in their environment when they're here. And the Bigfoot creatures will leave, you know, they're relational. They will leave things in return. Mm-hmm. And they can get angry, apparently, if you stop feeding them too, just like any other animal. They're not happy with that. So there's a physical aspect to them, not leaving out even all the stories where people have been picked up by them from their sleeping bags, tents, things like this. In fact, I know one gentleman that this happened to. I didn't put this in Dark Matter Monsters because he was very reluctant to tell me the story, where he was pulled out of a tent camping by himself up in Nederland, not far from here in the mountains, and he was pulled out of the tent at 2 a.m. by something that was extremely strong and fast. And there were no people camping around, and you and I know you do not know human is going to just go into someone's tent unless you're cuckoo, because people are armed out here. You could be shot very quickly.
Yeah.
If you do that to my tent, you're probably going to get shot. I mean, anyone who spends time out in the woods, you just will not go up to someone's tent in the middle of the night and start poking around. But these creatures will do this, and they've been known to pull people out of tents, to pull the whole tent up. And this happened to him. He was scared the bejesus out of him. He finally told the story to me after 20 years. Well, this has happened to other people where they've been picked up. Now, this is an interesting thing, Tim. And I'll get back to the answer to the question
sure,
in a second.
Sure.
This there, and I've been reading a lot of these stories. You can find these books on Amazon, various authors who've written books that purport to be true accounts of people's encounters. They just say they've assembled. You've probably come across these encounters that people have had. And there's different authors that cover different regions, you know, Tom Lyons, Rusty Wilson, others. Now, I've read many of these now, and it's very interesting to compare the stories that people have, because they really seem to me, I can't prove it, but they really seem like genuine encounter stories from national park rangers, campers, and people. Because some of them are very mundane. If you were writing stories, I think you would make them even more interesting. But some of them are quite, they fit what we know from decades of experience. One person said when they were camping with their girlfriend on Mount Rainier in Washington State, in Oregon, that they were lifted up in the middle of the night they had this wet dog smell, you know, and they're lifted up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what the person said, which we'll get back to your question immediately here.
Okay.
He said it didn't feel like he was, what carried him was walking. It felt like gliding. There were no footsteps.
Weird.
He didn't feel a physical thing until the creature jumped across a small ravine about 5 feet across and then came down on the ground, and the guy's neck kind of snapped and he was sore for about a month afterwards. But he said while they were just going, there was no up and down movement and no footsteps, no sound, silent. So that, again, assuming this is a true story, and you know, everything about it seemed very mundane apart from that, it fits with people I've talked to around Colorado, the Northwest. I've, you know, people when they say they've had experiences, I now talk to them to ask them what happened. It's just like UFO experiences. They won't volunteer it easily, but you talk to them, they'll tell you what happened. Again, it suggests to me that the Bigfoot creature is another state of matter than a human. Whether it's a human or not, I don't know. When we look at the DNA, it does leave hair behind. The DNA tests suggest it's not an identifiable animal. And it has some of the tests suggest some mitochondria on the, which comes from our, from the female side, that's mm-hmm. similar to us, human mitochondria. This is, would seem to be some sort of human relative going way back in the family tree, far enough back. So to answer your question more directly, where do they go? There is no question in my mind they can become invisible. People have been hiking on trails and they said something passed them. They could see the footprints pushing down on the ground, but they couldn't see anything there, but they could hear it and they could feel a breeze as it came by. Law enforcement officers have reported them becoming invisible right in front of their squad car. Some people said it looked like Saran wrap that turned into a Bigfoot, or vice versa. So the question is, when they're in that invisible mode, they would seem to be in our reality, but in a different state of matter. And in dark matter monsters, I go into this in terms of what's called coherent matter. Past the ordinary states of matter we're used to, solids, liquid, gases, or even plasmas like your fluorescent bulbs and lightning and plasmas out in the galaxies that emit light, you know, ionized dust and so forth. There's a fifth state of matter, a self-organized state of matter past the plasmas, which is ball lightning and macroscopic quantum objects where the particles are really intensely entangled and they can glow at room temperature. They're not, it's not like a candle that's giving off heat. It's a room temperature object. We mentioned the Bose-Einstein condensate at the beginning of the conversation. That's at zero Kelvin. That's at absolute zero, very fragile. Ball lightning is persistent. It's at our temperature. And that's another state of matter. To me, there's this continuum of matter that we see in our reality from very incoherent to very coherent. Ball lightning would be very coherent. And your ordinary light bulb would be much less coherent because it's giving off a lot of heat and it's different wavelengths. And ordinary matter, just the ordinary things around us, are less coherent. They're individualized. So it seems that Bigfoot and other cryptid creatures, including Dogman, which I think is more common in your neck of the woods. We get these stories of Dogman encounters in mm-hmm. Minnesota, Michigan, Upper Peninsula up there. Yeah. And there's many other types of cryptids. We don't have to go into them here. They seem to be in a state of matter that can morph, that can cloak, that can teleport, based on the witness testimony. Now, let me just say one thing here. I know traditional academics would treat those stories as, you know, it's just anecdotal, it's folklore. There's a lot of ways to discount it, but that's what they did with meteorites too. And that turned out to be really what they were, meteorites. So I'm going to take the position here. There's so many witnesses to this, and it's so consistent from one story to the next over 30 years. Go back to Ron Moorhead in the Sierra sounds, which mm-hmm. people can look up. Just look for Sierra sounds on YouTube. Ron put up the sounds of what the creatures sound like when they're talking amongst each other or are communicating with you. The testimony is so consistent, I think we have to go past the point where we're just saying, oh, this is just anecdotes. It's too consistent just to be a subjective experience. I think people are reporting what's happening to them. They say they go invisible. So to get back to your question, Tim, is it still in our dimension or not? I would say it's a bit of both. And the only reason I can say that is because I've spent a lot of time studying theories of parallel realities, multiverses, going back to Hugh Everett III at Princeton, the grad student that came up with the many worlds idea, you know, in from quantum mechanics. I mean, he's just looking at the math and saying, look, there are these branching structures. There's no reason that anything should look like it looks in a fixed form. It has all these, you know, probabilities associated with it. It could be looking different. Everything you see around you could be different colors, different temperatures, different shapes in the Schrodinger wave function. He said there just could be different states of it, and you're only seeing one sliver of that reality. Yeah. So they could be in other branches that cross over. But to specifically go to your question of the remains, I would argue the remains have been found based on witness encounters I've read. And in every single case, the Forest Service or the Park Service has decided that it's just easier for them to bury the body than to actually have it be front page news. Because, look, you're dealing with Park Service employees who are not used to a lot of attention. They sort of like to go home at the end of the day and just chill. Mm-hmm. They're not people that seek attention who work in park services, national forest. They would be in other jobs if they wanted to be on radio and TV, right?
Right.
They like being out there because they don't want to be the center of attention. They like their jobs. And I'm not criticizing them. But based on testimony I've seen from Florida all the way over to Wyoming and Yellowstone National Park, what they tell the witnesses who've maybe struck one of these and killed them with their car, which is very rare, but does happen occasionally because somehow the Bigfoot seem to like to go in front of cars. They've been told what you saw was a bear. We're disposing of the bear. Even though the people said this did not look like a bear, it looked more human than bear. Like other people, they've just said, look, it's just, I've been told this happens in the Park Service. It's just easier to, like, we don't want to deal with this. I guess the answer to your question, I know I'm being a little long-winded about this. Again, going back to our idea that reality is partly a social consensus, Perhaps it's like the meteorites where they just decided, oh, that's just a stone. Let's throw it away. I think they did do this with the evidence for Bigfoot too. It's not that the bodies haven't been found. It's that it's not acceptable to have this for a variety of reasons. It's not career enhancing for the people that would have the evidence. So they choose to not publicize it. But does that mean that they don't go somewhere else? The other side of your question, as an interdimensional being, do they disappear? It's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't have the answer yet. I don't know, but I would just say I think there is physical evidence. I've read cases of people being in archaeological expeditions where they came across huge bones that looked humanish, but were way too big. The skulls were too big. Everything was too big. It literally freaked them out so much, they just told the rest of the crew on the archaeological dig, oh, I had a family emergency after that. They don't even want to talk about it. This is not a subject that people are comfortable with. Let me just say that off the bat here. That I don't know if your impression is that, but mine is that people are not comfortable with this topic. And when they come across it, I don't know if it's something built into us, a fear of monsters or something. When people encounter this, even if it's on an archaeological dig, assuming these stories are true, there's something about it that we don't like. And we push it away. And I think that's what's going on with the whole topic, whether it's the National Park Service or just private people on digs or people that have come across the bodies occasionally. One more thing, Tim. People that have wanted to find the bodies don't seem to be able to do it. And these creatures are very good at staying hidden. No doubt about it. Avoiding you if they want to. But from what I've read, they can... In our reality, they can be killed by the same things that we're killed by: rock slides, avalanches, you know, falling off cliffs and things like this. There's just a whole variety of encounters out there, and they're mortal. They can be mortal. And I have read one story where the person did come across these cairns where they saw the other Bigfoot had stacked the bodies. The final argument being here, obviously, is that things don't last very long in the woods. There's so many scavengers out there, from turkey vultures to coyotes. Anything that dies in the woods is going to disappear very quickly.
That's very true. You know, I'll address one of the things you said, and that is, you know, it seems like people want to kind of stay away from something like that. There are some people that run to it, maybe sometimes a little too aggressively. I'll bring up the example recently. I don't remember the gentleman's name. I apologize. Who it was just a few weeks ago, put up a bit of a hoax as far as finding a Bigfoot skeleton. I'll put it in air quotes. And it turns out he hoaxed it with a gorilla skeleton, but it was so obvious that you could look at it and just go, that's a gorilla skeleton. That's not a Bigfoot skeleton. I want to say his name was like Joe Washington or something like that. It was, you know, and he's wearing the Indiana Jones outfit, and you could just tell that he's farming for attention. There are the people who will take and do the traveling circus, and you know they're in it for the money, who want to try to exploit what they can to say that they've come across a Bigfoot carcass. Or, you know, you do hear the news stories of, I'll say legislators that say, well, you know, we should open up Bigfoot hunting season, or, you know, they'll take it to an extreme that, you know, they're looking for nothing but attention. And those are the ones that are shooting so high that, you know, that it's nothing but hyperbole, because.
Right. Very good point. Very good point.
You know, they just want the spotlight, knowing that they're never going to achieve what they're hoping to achieve.
Right, right. It's so true.
You know, so I guess the happy medium is what we don't ever seem to achieve here.
Tim, it's such a good point what you're saying.
You know,
the people that seem to want the attention, you look at the evidence immediately and you look at it and it's just a person in a gorilla suit or something, and they're flying. It doesn't look at all like what witnesses report. It doesn't move. These creatures are fast. They can go over stump filled, rock filled areas like an Olympic runner. Again, they have this amazing ability, whether they're levitating or what they're doing. It's another form of matter in my view, but however they're doing it, it's true. The people that seem to want the attention, it's pretty clear that that's what they're doing. The cases that I look at are the people who don't want to use their names, who don't want any attention, and it's very difficult for them to repeat the stories because it's a little scary. Mm-hmm. And they prefer to forget about it.
Yeah.
That's my witnesses I've encountered have been scared by this, whether they're camping at night, people dozing in their trucks at a rest stop, and the creatures come up and walk around. They don't necessarily do anything, that they can. They can grab your truck. They can lift your vehicle off the ground, according to these reports. But they don't always do that. But just being around them, they instill a feeling of fear. I'm not sure if it's their intention or if just being around other states of matter. People around ball lightning, I just should say, have a fearful feeling. It's something about the... It's such a condensed energetic state of matter. It just leads you to feel a little on edge. But these witnesses that I read are people who don't want attention, and you've never heard from them, and they don't want to use their name. And that's a lot more believable to me, because they have no benefit from sharing this. They're not being paid. Their name's not even in. And that's so what we call this, Tim, in sociology, are hidden events.
Okay.
Hidden events are things that people experience but are not socially acceptable. And that's my answer to the evidence argument, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think the evidence is there. People, you'll often hear, like what you said earlier, we don't have the physical evidence. We don't officially have that, but we don't have official evidence of UFOs either. Mm-hmm. Even though you can talk to people who say that, people from the military or engineers who say they've handled wreckage. I wrote about this in Black Swan Ghosts, where I had an engineer, Phil, who had worked at JPL and aerospace companies. And he said they brought in stuff where they said, well, the owners left and we don't know how it works. And everyone looked at it and saw the microelectronics and said, this isn't even something we can do. And this is way ahead of us. So where is the evidence for UFOs? I think we agree they exist. The Congress is having hearings about it, but where's the physical evidence? Same sort of thing. I think the evidence is there, whether in the case of UFOs, it's in the basement of black budget programs, or in the case of Sasquatch, where the people have been told not to talk about it. Even witnesses are sometimes intimidated over this by law enforcement. They said, you saw a bear, and if you don't say you saw a bear, bad things are going to happen to you. I mean, so my sociological argument about this is the evidence is there in one form or another, but because, just like meteorites, we don't want to believe in it yet, the witnesses are discouraged from bringing it forward. The people who've really encountered it, who weren't out there for profit or anything else, but, to people come across these creatures where they're occasionally injured. Mm-hmm. And they will help them. They will remove a stick from their foot, something like this. And we've heard many accounts of this, people who grew up on farms who know how to deal with injuries to animals. And they talk about this. They would have had the evidence and they wouldn't have shared it. And I've heard of other cases where people had good photographic evidence, but the encounter was so violent, they didn't want to think about it again. And they deleted the photos because they just want to forget about this. And there's a newer documentary called A Flash of Beauty, Bigfoot Revealed. You might have seen it.
Yes.
You can get it.
Yep.
That is an excellent documentary. I got to know the producers of that. And I'll just say, fair disclosure, I'm going to be in the sequel to that, the second movie in mm-hmm. that series about this sort of aspect of it. In that first one, A Flash of Beauty, Bigfoot Revealed, part one, You saw those psychiatrists and psychologists say at the end of the documentary, your mind has so many defense mechanisms. It's going to process this away as an escaped gorilla, which if you go back in the literature 100 years ago, people were describing them as escaped gorillas. Mm-hmm. An escaped gorilla did this, escaped gorilla did that. This is how they didn't, either wild men or escaped gorillas. Those were the two. This goes back hundreds of years. You will either, and I've seen the witness accounts from all over where they said it looked like an escaped circus animal. That's what they thought, because that's the only thing your mind can process. It's going to be huge, big, and hairy out there.
Right.
But there were no circuses around it. Or you're, as they said in the documentary, you'll forget about, you'll literally have amnesia. You won't remember you had the encounter because, as you pointed out at the beginning of the interview here, it doesn't fit. And if it doesn't fit in your mind, I can see the evidence disappearing unless someone offered a huge reward. And I mean, there was some motivation, but people that go out looking for these do not seem to be able to find them. It's just people that did not want to find them that have the encounters. So I think our minds have these really strong self-defense mechanisms. And I'll just say, I have a friend who I hadn't seen in about 10 years. Come visit me in Boulder just so we could catch up. And she didn't think much of this Bigfoot topic. I told her about my book, mm-hmm. Dark Matter Monsters. And she left and she told me later, she said, this is not for me. I heard you talk about it, but I just thought, okay, this is not real. She went back to her family's vacation condo in northern Arizona and started looking around. She started seeing tree structures, which she originally thought were made by Boy Scouts, though she never saw any Boy Scouts. Little teepees of stick structures.
Yep.
Weird sounds at night in the forest that her parents were told her, oh, those are just forest animals, but they were very loud. Strange smells of wet dog skunk smells.
Mm.
And footprints. And when she started looking at it, she put it all together after visiting me here in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear from her for 7 months because she got freaked out by it. She actually started having sightings.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
They were dark shapes that she thought were shadows. You see how it works?
Yep.
Your mind is pushing it all away because it's not part of your reality. Maybe I would have even done this 10 years ago, even having heard Stan Gordon at a UFO conference, Kawani Lapsaridis. He talked about the quantum side, the interdimensional side, whatever you want. But I think for a lot of us, it's just like the UFO UAP topic. Look how we're dealing with it in the federal government. It just came out yesterday on thehill.com. They said that Congress is now considering that this is not human UAPs. It's not us, mm-hmm. not Russia. It's not China. It's not Jamaica. And it's not the US who have these objects that move at 20,000 miles an hour. And they're saying, what else is left? Well, it's non-human. So it's slow, but we had to call them UAPs. Maybe to talk about Bigfoot, Tim, we're going to have to relabel it.
Maybe.
As non-human hominin. Or something neutral that it doesn't have the emotional baggage and the fear factor.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I think. I think we push these things away, and it's more of us. It's more people getting comfortable with the topic first before we see the evidence.
So I have a couple of different things to ask here. One, did your friend notice any UAPs at the same time that she was noticing different?
Thanks for asking that.
Yeah.
Great question. So before I answer that specifically, let's go back to Stan Gordon in Southwest Pennsylvania. People were seeing UFOs and cryptids, and then sometimes cryptids and UFOs in the same field.
Okay.
And Bigfoot and the whole thing. So why does it all seem to go together?
Yeah.
It's part of a larger reality of another state of matter. I could be wrong about this, but I mean, come up with a better explanation. If we're surrounded by other states of matter that we're not all familiar with, on that continuum, they're going to show up together, and you're going to start seeing things that exist in that type of parallel reality. It's when you go to a zoo, you don't just see giraffes. You know, there's snakes there. There's different types of spiders sometimes. You know? And when you go to the zoo, you see a lot of different types of animals. And when you switch frequencies in our reality, there's other things there that exist at that frequency. It doesn't necessarily mean they're inherently connected. It just means they're in that part of the zoo of reality. Mm-hmm. That's sort of how I think about it.
Okay.
Because these witness accounts, it's just like you're asking about my friend from mm-hmm. Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she did see UFOs around. In fact, that's what she was really interested in. She would send me videos of these. She put them on her YouTube channel for me to take a look at. And some of them look pretty UAP-ish to me. I mean, they're hovering. They're right below a cloud. What is that? It's sort of, you know, we'd call it UFO, UAP. Her encounters with the Sasquatch start with talking to me about it, maybe like someone listening to the show right now, they're hearing about it. She starts looking around this area in northern Arizona, and then she starts seeing the tree structure. She starts noticing that she's been hearing howling sounds at night that she just assumed was someone, you know, some creature. The strange smells, which people report around, you know, it's hard to identify animal smell, not always a good smell. Sometimes people say it's the worst smell they ever smell.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
She goes and touches the tree structures. She goes out in the woods and starts looking at them, what she thought were Boy Scout little experiments or practice.
That's kind of brave, but okay.
Yeah, and this is what she thought triggered all of what happened next to happen. She felt like those tree structures are like an antenna system for them to detect people moving around the forest, other Bigfoot, or maybe them, us, moving around.
Hmm.
You know, like a sensor system.
Yeah.
Because she said once she started touching the tree structures, they started coming closer to the house until she started seeing huge sticks against the house.
Hmm.
They actually came right up to the house and leaned them against the house. Now, in her view, and I don't want to flip anyone out or freak anyone out about this, but she started feeling like they were being territorial.
Really?
Even about her and the house. Like, saying, this is my territory. That's what she felt the sticks meant, leaning against the house. And then she felt like it was interacting with the tree structures that led them to come closer, until she actually sees one day. And keep in mind, it took her months to even tell me about this because she couldn't process it. She got so frightened by seeing one of these within 100 feet of the house looking at her.
Mm-hmm.
She thought it was a bear at first or a shadow, but until it stood up and it was over 10 feet high and very broad, which is again, consistent with the, and it walked behind a tree and then walked behind another tree like hide and seek. She told me that she didn't even bother to turn the lights out or lock the door. She went into the garage and gunned it out of there with the car as fast as she could and never went back. Now, if you read the literature, this is what people report. And I've read this type of story many times now. But do you want to tell this to people? Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters?
True.
Yeah. I mean, would you want to tell this story? Her story's safe with me. I mean, yeah. It started with me telling her about writing a book about this. Yeah. But for the average person, would you tell your neighbor this? Would you tell the realtor why you were selling the condo? But Tim, I've read many stories where people sold their rural property because of the same sort of thing happening. They just didn't feel comfortable there anymore. Or even more than that, the creatures started coming in. They never tell anybody, or if they tell the realtor doesn't tell anyone, and the realtor is selling the same home over and over again, knowing very well what's going on there. Not putting in a disclosure agreement that you put in realty contracts about lead in the paint.
Yeah.
There should be a disclosure about having Bigfoot. People go out to rural areas in the U.S. thinking they have a rural paradise now.
Yeah.
Only to realize there's locals around, locals who've been there for a couple hundred thousand years.
Well, you know, on the East Coast, they do have, I think there's a few states where you have to report if a house is haunted or not.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember which states there are, but you do have to, if you believe a house is haunted, you have to put it in the disclosure.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oof, that's fascinating. I mean, so that's sort of saying hauntings are real empirically if it's in a realty disclosure.
Yeah.
Real estate contract. Yeah, this is not a topic we discuss very openly. I think we're going to need to have a conversation like this, just like we do with UAP. I mean, I have a petition on change.org. If people go to darkmattermonsters.com, I have the link to the petition. And it's just saying that these creatures should be federally recognized as some sort of life form. They should be given some basic protections as we would anything intelligent or even like a human, whatever they turn out to be, because we need to have a national conversation about this. It's not just UFOs and UAPs, it's cryptids and Bigfoot. And the reason we need to have a conversation is some of these encounters become violent one way or another. People can start shooting, the Bigfoot can retaliate. They can be very helpful if they get along with the people. They can rescue people in dangerous situations. I've read about this multiple times, where they can put a car back on the road. They seem to know what to do. Mm-hmm. They're close enough to us that they know the situations we're in. They can be extremely helpful. They can pull children out of rapids and streams. They can rescue canoers who overturned in their canoes or their kayaks. And they can also be hostile. Yeah. They can stalk people way out there in the backcountry. They can throw rocks. They can damage your vehicle. When you bring it into the repair shop, are you going to say those dents were caused by a Bigfoot throwing huge rocks at us? Probably not. But this is what people say happens. Even in Dark Matter Monsters, I have a local witness, someone I knew, Lauren. She told me I could use her first name. I mean, she was walking up in Estes Park. She said a huge rock came between her and her friend walking behind her. It knocked her friend over from the wind velocity. Hmm. Okay. It's not something just falling down. I've been around rocks falling from, this is not this. It's coming horizontally between them at a high speed, big enough to have killed you. Didn't hit anyone. Just goes right between. How do you even talk about that? But this is, these things are so weird, and we don't want to be, we've been talking about this, we don't want to be stigmatized. It's something we should make people feel comfortable. We should find out what people are experiencing out there. I don't know if you've talked to hunters or people out there, but some people don't want to go out there ever again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay.
As, so we're on the same. As we wrap up here today, Dr. Hine, I got to ask you this question, because I've always had this in the back of my head, and I've wanted to run it past one of my guests here, and I feel like you're the guest to run this by. Although Bigfoot can be big and scary, especially when angry, it's understandable something as big as 7 to 10 feet coming at you can be incredibly scary, probably more scary than a bear. Do you feel like they're also giving off some sort of a pheromone that can inspire additional fear? Do you think they're giving off some sort of a scent or a pheromone that is instilling more fear than we may actually feel, or that they're giving off other pheromones that are calming us that people that are having good experiences with Bigfoot are maybe being lulled into a false sense of of feeling calm.
Like a literally a fear moan or a happy moan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a good question. When they want to calm people down, they're very good at that. And they can really create agitation just by their presence can create an agitation.
Yeah.
And that's a very good question. Is it their frequency? Is it something there? Are we primed to smell something like a prey would?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that, but it's certainly both types of experiences. And when they want to create terror, they can turn it on. Well, and when they just want to play around, and like Ron Moorhead had many encounters up at the Sierra camp. I interviewed him. It's on my YouTube channel this year. But he didn't feel anything intimidating, not once from them. They would make loud sounds. They would make it seem like they were taking the camp apart, but they would go outside, Ron and his colleagues, in their structure, and nothing had been touched. But it looked like metal was hitting metal, everything. They can mimic. They can create mimicry. They can sound like your dog or your relative talking to you to lure you away from where you are. I mean, they're really smart. They're extremely intelligent. People like Ron say they never had one intimidating experience. He had a couple strange things happen here and there, but he never felt threatened. And yet, and that was with, I think, 9 encounters starting from the 70s to recently, when the last time they had. So it's a whole range of experience, whether they're deliberately doing this or not. I don't know. But I mean, you read encounters from people, and it's such a variation. It's really hard to wrap your mind around it. You're on their good side. They're going to be helpful. People report them being very useful sometimes, even taking them out of dangerous situations, windy storms and things. And then other times they can really seem hostile to the point where you want to get out of there as quickly as possible.
Right. Right. The book that's out there right now, Dark Matter, Monsters, Cryptids, Ball Lightning, and the Science of Secret Life Forms. It's available right now. We got a link in the description of this program. Dr. Simeon Hine, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Folks, want to thank you so much for a great week this week. Again, want to thank Kathy Stearman for being with us on True Crime Tuesday. Want to thank Beer City Bruiser for being with us all of this week, and Dr. Simeon Hine for being with us this week as well. Want to remind you folks to take care of yourself and each other. As I've told you in the past, I believe the world's getting a little bit colder, a little bit darker, and I believe we can turn this thing around. I'm still a little bit of an optimist here. I believe that if we do a little something for each other, we can turn this thing around, make the world a little bit brighter place. You can do it. It's real simple. Somebody who just needs a helping hand, just go ahead and help them. Maybe somebody's out there doing some yard work and needs a little help. Help your neighbor out. Maybe there's somebody there who needs an extra dollar or two or needs something at the grocery store. Help them out. Maybe there's somebody on a street corner in need, needs a couple of bucks. Help them out. We can do it by helping each other. There are organizations that have people in need. The people in Eastern Kentucky are still in need. And need your dollars to help rebuild their community. Help them out. There's people at home. There's veterans who need help. Help them out. Everywhere you look, there are people in need who need you. You can be a hero to somebody. It doesn't have to be a child. It can be anybody. Just turn in any direction. There's somebody that you can be a hero to. Take the opportunity this weekend. Take 5 minutes. That's all it takes. 5 minutes to reach out anonymously and be a hero for somebody. I believe that if each one of us just does a little part, we can be a hero to somebody and we can turn this thing around and we can work together. That's the thing. Today, we're just not working together. If we work together, we can turn this thing around. We can make it a better place and leave it better than we found it for our future generations. Just a little something from me to you. I know I'm going to do that this weekend at Michigan Paracon. Hopefully I can brighten up a few days as well. I'm looking forward to it. And again, I hope to see a few of you this weekend in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and be able to say hi and give hugs and just make somebody's day this weekend in Michigan Paracon. I know you're going to make my day if I see you in Michigan Paracon as well. I'm looking forward to seeing a few smiling faces and getting a few hugs myself. So come on over and say hi this weekend in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. I'm looking forward to it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you so much again for being a listener and for patronizing our sponsors here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Darkness Radio.